Good evening. We're going to go ahead and start. I believe we have a quorum. We have enough people here. So welcome to tonight's meeting of the Northern Region Advisory Council. My name is Justin Oliver. I represent the at-large of this RAC. I'm the co-chair. Our chairman, Bryce Thurgood, is attending a viewing tonight, so we'll excuse him. We'll go ahead and start by going around and introducing everyone. I'd like to start with John, if you'll introduce your name and who you represent.
I'm John Blazard from Camas, representing agriculture.
Kevin McLeod, Plain City, representing at-large, public at-large.
Chris Oakstrom, Ogden, representing non-consumptive.
Matt Clark, Ogden, at-large.
Randy Hutchison, Ogden, at-large.
Paul Chase, out of Logan, with Forest Service.
Mike Lauder from Hooper, representing Sportsman.
Chad Jensen, Cache County elected.
Darren Perry out of Brigham City, the Native American connection.
Kristen Purdy from Ogden, non-consumptive.
Kristen also will be our timekeeper. She will be the queen of the timer tonight. So if anyone goes over, she'll be sure to let you know that you're done talking. I also want to recognize, Byron Bateman from our Wildlife Board, who's in attendance, and we recognize him and thank him for coming tonight. I ask that you'd please join me in turning off the ringers of your phones so that we can have an uninterrupted meeting tonight. And the purpose of the Regional Advisory Committee is to gather input from public counsel or public concerning wildlife management, policy rules, and regulations. The council then makes recommendations to the Wildlife Board. The Wildlife Board considers the recommendations from the five regional advisory councils and sets policy for all protected species in Utah. Tonight, as we're during this meeting, we ask that everyone would please respect everyone's right to an opinion, even if it is in conflict with yours. There is no need for clapping or vocal outbursts to support or criticize others' comments. This meeting will be recorded for the transcription of the minutes. The audio recording and minutes will be available on the DWR website. When speaking, use the microphones and speak clearly into them. The public will use the microphone located at the front of the audience, and speakers should state their name and, if they wish, where they are from. I was told that we're having a little bit of issues with the microphone, so to the RAC members, we ask to please, when you speak, to speak directly into it and loud so John can also hear you. Am I being quiet? Is that what I'm being told? Okay. And again, as public goes up to the microphone, please step right up to the microphone. A lot of times if you are away from it even more than 6 inches, you're not able to hear anything, so we invite to please get right up close and personal with the microphone. I believe that is it. Please take a look at the agenda for tonight's meeting. And if there is no objection, we will approve the agenda for tonight's meeting. All right. There being no objection for the agenda, tonight's meeting is approved. The next business in order is the approval of the minutes from the previous meeting. Everyone should have received a copy of the minutes via email. Are there any corrections to the minutes that anyone recognized? All right. Seeing none, the minutes are approved as circulated. The next business in order is the Wildlife Board update, and I've asked where Justin Doling was there, so I've asked if he would please provide a report of the Wildlife Board meeting, please. I didn't have you introduce yourself either.
I'm Justin Doling. I'm the regional supervisor, serve as the executive secretary, and I'm a non-voting member. So we had a pretty lively Wildlife Board meeting. I think it went about 6 hours. So there's several motions and several moving parts. I'll try to review that with you here. In our fur bearer rule amendments, there was a motion to accept the rule amendments as presented, and then there was amendment to that motion to include the Animal Control Board when the working group reconvenes in 1 year to review the effects of the change and report to the board. And that amendment passed unanimously, which also meant that the original motion passed as well. For fur bearer and bobcat harvest recommendations, there was a motion to that the division research the possibility of multi-year fur bearer licenses like we offer in the big game program, and the just a regular combination license. Those come in 1 to 5 year increments if you'd like to buy one of those. But there was a motion to look into the possibility of providing those as a with the fur bearer license option and report back to the board in June of 2019, and that passed unanimously. The next motion was to accept the fur bearer rule harvest recommendations for 2018 and 19 as presented, and that also passed unanimously. The cougar recommendations took a fair amount of time, and there's several motions here, so kind of bear with me. But the first motion was to basically have the book cliffs switch to a split season rather than a harvest objective and maintain the current permit level of 29 permits, and that passed unanimously. Move that the division present a recommendation to the Wildlife Board next year on the inclusion of GPS data in check-in in the check-in process and require the submission of locations, time of kill, and a photograph of the cougar's sex, and that also passed unanimously. I think that was one of our discussion items here. We went into quite length on GPS locations. The third motion was to split the Ochre Stansbury unit into two separate units. So Stansbury will become a harvest objective unit with 4 permits, and Ochre will become a limited entry unit with 8 permits and include the conservation tag in the Ochre portion of that split. And that passed unanimously. Create a harvest objective subunit was the next motion on the Mineral Mountains with 3 permits and leave the remaining 10 permits on the Beaver East unit. So they also wanted to split the Beaver unit, and that passed unanimously. Let's see, the next motion is to increase the Southeast Manti unit permit by only 2 rather than the division's recommendation of 4, and that passed 5-1. The next motion was that we keep the East Canyon unit as a limited entry and maintain the permit level at 10. I know we had a lot of discussion about that in our RAC, and that passed 4-2. And then still one more motion, and that was to approve the balance of the division's recommendation and amendments, and that passed unanimously. And then we didn't hear this in our RAC, but I want to just highlight the discussion about issuing additional antlerless permits to address drought conditions throughout the state. So the Division of Wildlife Resources did an assessment of habitat conditions and came up with the following recommendations. These are statewide numbers. So the division's recommendation was to add an additional 723 antlerless elk permits statewide, and those will go on separate little units, 35 doe pronghorn permits, and 109 bison permits. So the motion, let's see, the first motion was to accept the additional antlerless permits as presented by the division, keeping the bison recommendation at 109, except change the bison cow hunts on the last 2 bison hunts to hunter's choice. So the division had recommended cow-only hunts for all 4 new hunts, and the motion was to change the last 2 into hunter choice. Then there was an amendment to the motion to include an additional 500 antlerless elk permits to the already proposed 723 and also distribute those over the same hunt units. And that motion failed for a lack of a second, that amendment failed for a lack of a second. So the original motion was voted on and it passed 5-1. And then the last action item was to the sensitive species rule amendments, and the board basically made a motion to accept the sensitive species rule amendments as presented by the division, and that was also unanimous.
Okay, is there, do I ask for questions on that? I don't believe I do. Do I?
Did you have a question?
Is there any questions about what took place at the Wildlife Board meeting that anyone has? All right, we'll let Justin continue now with the regional update, please.
So real quickly, I'll just give you a little update on what's been going on in our region. But before I begin, I know we had a lot of discussion about the proposed winter closure at Hardware Ranch when the management plan was presented here at the last RAC meeting. We took that under advisement. We considered that those comments that we received, and in the end, we decided it was best to go ahead and evaluate the need for a winter closure over the 5-year life of this plan. And so that change was made to the Hardware Ranch management plan, and that plan has now been signed by our director. So in our outreach section, they are working on a training video to help educate employees and the public about how to look for quagga mussels in internal water systems. Apparently some of these quagga mussels are getting drawn into the cooling systems and getting drawn into the ballast systems, and it's real hard to be able to detect those. So this training video will hopefully instruct employees what to look for and also help the public kind of go through a same similar self-check when they get their boat home. But the detection rate of these mussels went from 2 last year to over 120 this year. So it's a pretty serious problem, and don't know if it's a result of low water in Lake Powell. Most of these are coming from Lake Powell, but it's alarming that we had to basically not allow at the time of this report, 120 boats that had made it from Lake Powell and were ready to launch into other waters here in northern Utah. So hopefully that training video will do its job. The Waterfowl Youth Fair is at Farmington Bay on Saturday, this September the 18th. And then we had the grand opening dedication ceremony for the new Nature Center at Farmington Bay, and that was this morning. In our habitat section, they're working with fire assessment to try to basically design opportunities for future rehab work. In our Great Salt Lake program, they're finishing up Phragmites treatments. In the aquatic section, September 18th and 19th, they'll be doing a rotenone treatment for cutthroat trout restoration on Big Creek in Rich County. Kokanee spawning what I'm told is kokanee are spawning now at Causey and Pineview, are getting really close to spawning. Stocking a lot of community fisheries. They say right now the Wheeler Bay is fishing well for catfish, so get out there and enjoy some fishing. Let's see, in the wildlife section, they're finishing preseason classifications for pronghorn and elk, and they're also working pretty diligently on some elk depredation in agricultural settings, both in Cache Valley and Rich County. And then in our law enforcement section, they've been busy with the archery hunts. It's been fairly slow. They're starting to see some harvest occur, and fire patrols are beginning to slow down. They've spent over 1,500 hours this year doing perimeter patrols for different fires that have occurred throughout the state. So that's what I have for the regional update, unless there's questions.
Thank you, Justin. There's no questions. We'll proceed. Wanted to recognize that if Dave would want to introduce himself just real quick, he came in a little bit late.
David Earle, Northern Ag.
Okay, thank you. All right, so the meeting will proceed as follows. A representative of the Division of Wildlife Resources will make a presentation on the agenda item. Then we will have questions from the public on the presentation. This is the time for questions only, not comments. Next, we will have questions from the council on the presentation. Then we will have comments from the public on the agenda item. Persons representing themselves will have 3 minutes to comment, and persons representing organized groups will have 5 minutes to comment. In either case, please fill out a blue comment card if you wish to comment and indicate if you would like to address the council or provide a written comment. At the end of the public comment period, the public portion of that agenda item ends, and further public participation will only be at the request of the council for clarification. Next, the council will comment on the agenda item. Then the council will make motions recommending action by the Wildlife Board on the agenda item, deliberate those motions, and vote. And then if there's council members who wish to abstain from voting, if they'll state their conflict, and council members voting in opposition to all motions will provide their reasoning. The meeting will then proceed to the next agenda item until completed. Make sure I don't miss anything. Is that everything? I believe that's what we have. So we'll go ahead now and begin with our agenda. And so we will first hear from Randy. Will we go here first? Randy Opplinger first from Coldwater Sport Fish Coordinator. And we'll hear from him first. Okay.
Randy is actually going to sit in the audience tonight. I'm going to take care of tonight's presentation for our suggested regulation changes. My name is Craig Walker. I'm the Assistant Chief of Fisheries, or Chief of Aquatics, I should say, over Sport Fish with the Division of Wildlife Resources in Salt Lake. Thank you for the opportunity tonight. Good evening. I will be presenting to you the results of our fishing regulations survey and our suggested changes for the 2019-2020 regulations and guidebook. Before I get into the survey results and our suggested changes for regulations, I did want to kind of give you all an overview of what we in aquatics view as our objectives of actually performing regulation changes or implementing regulations. The first of these is the maximization of angler satisfaction. Another thing we are looking to do with regulations is increase angler use of Utah's fisheries. A third thing is enhance trophy opportunities where possible. Modifying harvest where desirable is always an objective. Simplification of regulations when necessary and beneficial is something we seek to do. And maintaining consistency between management actions and conservation needs is another thing that we aim to do with regulation changes. As I go through the regulation changes later in this presentation, I'll try to tack in each one of these objectives where appropriate to those suggested regulation changes. First, let's dive into the fishing regulation survey for 2018. As in previous years, the Division of Wildlife Resources conducted an online survey to gather angler input on our proposed regulation changes for 2019-2020. The survey ran from May 18th through June 15th in 2018. We received 4,718 responses, and that's a 27% response rate, which is pretty darn good as surveys go, so we're pretty pleased with that. In addition to the responses that we gathered related to the actual regulation changes, we did collect information this year on the behaviors, preferences, and county of residence for our respondents. That helps us dive in a little bit deeper into some of their responses related to the regulation changes, if need be. Just broadly speaking, our regulation changes were supported by 70% of our respondents in most instances. 30% of our respondents opposed all of the proposed regulation changes. You can rephrase that if you'd like. However, we did see some localized opposition to proposed changes in a couple of instances, and I'll present that during our regulation portion of this presentation. Speaking of regulations, getting right into it, I was told to put in sexy fish pictures, so there you go. There's a very nice striped bass out of Lake Powell. Getting into our general reg changes, the first one I'll go over with you is our suggestion for corn to be used as bait statewide. As some of you might remember, during our 2016 survey, anglers were asked if they would support the use of corn as bait. 70% of respondents at that time did indeed support the use of corn as bait. And as a result, in 2017 and 2018, we piloted the use of corn on 8 lakes and reservoirs statewide. During that time frame, we also tracked littering violations to assess the impact of the use of corn as bait. Another way that we assessed the impact of the use of corn as bait was during our 2018 survey, we actually posed the question to anglers, did they witness any negative impacts at the 8 pilot waters as a result of corn use legalization? Of the 1,636 anglers who fished at one or more of those 8 waters, only 3% stated that they witnessed negative impacts. We also conferred with our law enforcement folks, and we did not see any changes in DWR littering violations at Utah waters during this time frame. And anecdotally, they informed us that they did not see an impact of corn use at these 8 waters. So right now, we are recommending that the statewide legalization of corn as bait be started in 2019. And that is in order to, as I mentioned before, simplify regulations statewide. A second general regulation that we would like to propose this year is the elimination of the Lake Powell reciprocal fishing stamp. During the 2018 survey, anglers were asked if they would support the elimination of the reciprocal permit for Arizona residents to fish on the Utah portion of Lake Powell. They were in support of that. As I mentioned before, at least 70% were in support of that. DWR feels that the removal of the reciprocal permit requirement will actually increase angler use of Lake Powell. Given the response we received from our respondents and that positive, that increase of angler use at Lake Powell, we recommend that the reciprocal permit be eliminated at Lake Powell starting in 2019. A third general regulation change was actually not put forward in the survey. This has to do with a law enforcement issue that we needed to clarify within our rule. It has to do with the fact that DWR enforcement of fathead minnow sales commercially, live fathead minnow sales, requires some clarification of what fathead minnows are. Right now, DWR recommends that all color variants of fathead minnows be identified as bait species to draw a balance between management actions and conservation needs. What that will do is prevent the sale of all color variants of fathead minnows as ornamental species, mitigating the escapement risk of live fish and the impact to native species in the state of Utah. Another one that we did not put forward in a survey, and this is the final general regulation change, is the set line permit license age requirement. We were uncertain as to where this came from, what hangover and rationale was behind this, but those under the age of 12 were required to purchase a valid fishing license or combination license to fish with a set line. Didn't really make a whole heck of a lot of sense to us because you don't have to have a valid fishing license under the age of 12 in the state of Utah. So we recommend removing the set line rule requirement for those under the age of 12 to promote ease of use in the set line fishing arena. Moving on to special regulation changes, I'll get into the regional special regulation changes in a second, but first and foremost, we have kind of a statewide special regulation change. Right now, we're looking at promoting tiger muskie by actually stocking them in some of our community waters and exposing anglers who don't necessarily fish for tiger muskie regularly but may fish community waters to the opportunity to fish for tiger muskie. However, community waters are small. The Division of Wildlife Resources is concerned about tiger muskie stocked in community waters being quickly removed by anglers. They are stocked in low densities in these smaller waters, and the current community fishing pond regulations allow for the harvest of 2 fish regardless of species. We really don't want to see them stocked and harvested and removed as quickly as possible. We'd like them to persist in these community waters to give as many people an opportunity to handle them, touch them, catch them as possible. So therefore, the Division of Wildlife Resources is recommending the establishment of a catch and release regulation for tiger muskie at community fishing ponds. We will maintain a current two fish regulation for all other species at community waters, however, and we will move forward with the development of special regulations for each community water where tiger muskie are introduced in the future. Jumping into the regional special regulations, the Northeast region, we asked our anglers whether or not they would support a two-day possession and liberalized lake trout limit at Flaming Gorge Reservoir. Only 17% of respondents were opposed to a two-day possession that would allow for eight trout or kokanee salmon in possession, no more than six of which could be kokanee salmon, 24 lake trout in possession with two exceeding 28 inches, 12 catfish, and 20 smallmouth and largemouth bass or black bass. Among the respondents who actually fished at Flaming Gorge, and this gets into why we actually asked people's preferences, it gives us a little bit more insight, only 20% opposed this regulation. A little bit of background information related to this topic. Wyoming has also moved to a 24 fish lake trout possession limit. DWR and Wyoming Game and Fish are trying to work in concert to encourage the harvest of lake trout to mitigate impacts to the kokanee fishery. DWR over the past 4 years has observed no biological effect of two-day possession in any other waters where we've had two-day possession. We only omitted two during the first go-round 4 years ago. In order to simplify our regulations and increase angler harvest of lake trout right now, we're recommending that two-day possession at Flaming Gorge Reservoir be implemented with a one-day limit of 12 lake trout with one over 28 inches. Moving on to the central region, we asked our respondents whether or not they would support a Strawberry Reservoir two-day possession. Only 13% of respondents opposed a two-day possession with eight trout or kokanee salmon in possession, no more of four of those being cutthroat trout under 15 inches, and no more than two of those cutthroat trout being over 22 inches. Among those respondents who actually fished at Strawberry Reservoir, only 17% were in opposition to this regulation change. So right now, we are recommending two-day possession at Strawberry Reservoir to, again, simplify regulations. At that point, assuming that you are approving or the board approves Strawberry and Flaming Gorge two-day possession, there will be two-day possession statewide. Moving on to the Southeast region, Pete's Hole Reservoir tributary closure removal. Historically, there has been a seasonal protection of cutthroat trout on that water body. That protection is no longer a conservation priority. We don't actually consider this population to be a conservation population. And this closure was actually supported by our respondents. DWR therefore recommends removal of the Pete's Hole tributary closure to increase the use of this fishery. Moving on to Recapture Reservoir, we inquired whether anglers would support liberalized northern pike limits with a minimum size restriction at Recapture Reservoir in southeast Utah. They were in support of that. DWR recommends, therefore, establishment of a 20 northern pike limit with one over 36 inches at Recapture to increase the average size of the fish in this population and therefore increase the trophy opportunities at this water. If anybody's ever fished this water, there's a lot of northerns there, but they aren't very large. Moving on to the northern region, and that's actually Chris Crockett from the central region, but you know, he occasionally migrates and fishes in the northern region. We inquired whether our anglers would support a modification to the Cutler Reservoir channel catfish regulation. Currently, it is the eight fish statewide regulation for channel catfish. They were in support of a modification of that regulation, and we are right now recommending the establishment of a four channel catfish limit at Cutler Reservoir and its tributaries so that we can begin developing trophy channel catfish opportunities. This is kind of the first of hopefully many trophy catfish opportunities in Utah. Right now, we're planning on working with Chris Penny and his biologists to monitor the response of Cutler Reservoir and that channel catfish population, and we will use that data, those data, to inform our management team and their decisions on how we manage catfish statewide in the future. Moving on to the southern region, we asked folks if they would support a no limit on brook trout at East Fork of Boulder Creek. In fact, we actually asked them the question if they would support a catch and kill regulation at East Fork of Boulder Creek in southern Utah. We are trying to encourage the removal of brook trout from East Fork as part of our cutthroat trout conservation effort. Only 19% of respondents statewide were opposed to establishment of a catch and kill brook trout regulation. However, when you change the scale, suddenly we're in Garfield County, 78% of respondents were indeed opposed to the regulation. So in the interest of compromise, we backed off of the catch and kill brook trout regulation, and right now the Division of Wildlife Resources, to aid our conservation effort while not inflame tempers down in Garfield County, are suggesting that we have a no limit regulation for brook trout on East Fork of Boulder Creek. The difference between a no limit, it's your choice to keep as many brook trout as you would like. A catch and kill, if you actually catch a brook trout, you must harvest and kill that individual. So that's a subtle difference, but we feel that a no limit regulation is a good compromise here. Moving on to Navajo Lake, we inquired as to whether our anglers would support a minimum length limit at Navajo Lake for specifically splake, but also all salmonids on that reservoir. Right now, DWR is recommending the establishment of a minimum length limit of one trout over 22 inches to prevent overharvest specifically of splake that are vulnerable to harvest seasonally. And our respondents were actually in favor of that. The East Fork of the Sevier River currently has a special regulation on it that involves a conservative limit and gear restrictions, fly and lure only. We inquired as to whether our anglers would support the removal of that special regulation on East Fork of Sevier River. Only 16% of respondents opposed the elimination of the fly and lure restriction and the increase of the limit to four trout on the East Fork of the Sevier River. However, among the respondents who actually fish at the East Fork of the Sevier River, 51% were in opposition to the regulation change. Right now, we are indeed recommending the elimination of the fly and lure restriction and increasing the trout limit to four fish on the East Fork to increase the use of the resource by all anglers and improve the fish population health. In the estimation of the biologists, it could use a little culling, a little thinning, to actually increase the condition of those fish. However, we do recognize that there is a disparity between what is the statewide viewpoint and what is the local user viewpoint. And assuming that this would be passed, we would revisit this regulation change in the event that conflicts did arise between angler groups, existing users and new users. Southern Region is also recommending the elimination of special regulations on Mammoth Creek. The area covered under special regulations currently is no longer available for public access, and therefore the Division of Wildlife Resources recommends eliminating the special regulations on that section. There's really no need to have that special reg on something that is not afforded public access. Another elimination of special regulations suggested by the Southern Region is that on UM Creek. Cutthroat trout conservation concerns related to whirling disease are no longer an issue on this tributary. At one time, they were, and they were everywhere. We have not seen the impacts that were forecasted, and therefore, we recommend that the elimination of special regulations on UM Creek be implemented to simplify regulations, and this was also supported by our angling public. And one final regulation change for the southern region and for this presentation is the elimination of the special regulation at Paragona or Red Creek Reservoir. Right now, that is supported by the general public. We are recommending it more for the ability to allow that fish population to rebound after the impacts from the Bryan Head fire and the sedimentation that occurred as a result of that in that reservoir. It used to be an 8-trout limit. It was a very healthy trout population. We'd like to back that off to 4-trout to give them a leg up on this the impacted system. And with that, I'd like to thank you all for the opportunity tonight. I'd also like to remind you to share your ideas with the DWR annually by June 15th with our online survey. Be sure to share your ideas with regional managers. Share ideas at RAC meetings, which is what we're here to do tonight. The email address for ideas is dwrcomment@utah.gov, or you can mail your ideas to us in the Salt Lake office, Sport Fisheries Program Coordinator, Division of Wildlife Resources, P.O. Box 146301, Salt Lake. And with that, I will hand it off to you guys.
Thank you, Craig. Appreciate that. At this time, is there any questions from the public? Not comments, but questions only from the public. Do we have any other comments? Okay. Any comments from the, or sorry, any questions from the RAC at this time? I had one that I wrote down I was going to ask. With the license at Lake Powell, the reciprocal license, does Arizona not offer that to Utah residents?
Right now, this would make it an equal playing field.
Okay, that was my question.
Yeah. So it would make it more similar to Bear Lake.
Okay.
You can fish either side as long as you have one of the state's licenses, valid licenses.
All right. Okay. That was the only question I had. Any other questions? All right. We'll now take comments from the public on the agenda item. And again, just reminding about the, if you represent yourself, you have 3 minutes and a group 5 minutes, and we'll start. The first comment card is from Ken Strong, and he will be representing SFW.
Ken Strong, representing Sportsman for Fish and Wildlife. First of all, I'd like to thank each and every one of you for your efforts and time you spend on the RAC. I'm on the Central RAC, so I know what you go through, and I just appreciate all your time. I'd like to thank Craig and Randy for all the work that they do in the fishing. We've always been able to work together, and I just appreciate all their efforts. Sportsman for Fish and Wildlife accepts the division's proposal as presented on the fishing with two exceptions. Those exceptions being in the southern region, east fork of the Sevier River, they want to change the limit from 2-trout to 4-trout, and we agree with that. But we do not want to remove the artificial flies and lures only. As he mentioned, 51% of the people who fish there like it to remain artificial flies and lures only. And as an information to you, there's 3 miles of the river that are artificial flies and lures only. The rest is all open to bait and everything else. And second of all, on UM Creek, they want to remove the closed possession of cutthroat or trout with cutthroat markings. We agree with that, but we want it to also stay artificial flies and lures only. And that's all I have, and thank you for your time.
Thank you. All right. We don't have any other comment cards. Is there anyone that came in late that may not have brought one up? All right. Thank you. Now I'll go to the RAC for comments from the RAC. We've got a lot to say today, don't we? I guess it'd be a comment slash, as Ken brought up about the artificial lures. I know during your presentation you mentioned that it was to try to promote more use. Is there anything showing I mean, I know when I take my kids fishing, all right, we can use worms here. This is where we use spinners and things. Is there anything showing that it definitely increases or decreases the number of fishermen on a particular body of water by doing that?
So one thing, you know, if bait anglers are more likely to harvest fish, it would indeed increase the population health, which is something that we'd like to do as far as thinning species, which most hardware anglers, myself included, when I'm on streams, I probably don't catch fish or harvest fish that often. We do have information that shows that small streams, which a lot of these I would consider to be small, wadable streams or creeks, are primarily used by bait anglers, or preferred by bait anglers, I should say. And that comes out of our statewide survey. The problem is that proportionally, I don't think we afford them the opportunity to fish those types of waters as much as we do to fly and lure anglers. So there's some folks waiting in the wings to access some of these waters that actually prefer to fish these waters that we don't afford access to right now. So I believe that we would actually see an increase in use on some of these streams. On a place like UM Creek, we're more comfortable with that because we have 13 miles, I think, of creek to distribute the pressure and distribute the different preferences for bait, fly, lure, along that stretch of river and kind of disperse that use similar to almost like a Forest Service model where you have foot and horse traffic over here and OHV traffic over there. So
where's UM Creek located?
Southern Utah. good
Sorry.
Grief. Kanab-ish, Panguitch-ish?
Well, trying real fast. It's kind of Fish Lake, Johnson Reservoir, kind of right in that area. It's kind of, I don't think it actually goes into Johnson Reservoir, but the road where you would access it is basically a mile or so from Johnson, which is kind of by Fish Lake. No, UM.
But I mean, we fully understand SFW's point and their concerns and the concerns of those that are out there with fly and lure and really the need to have that kind of discrete location where they can perform that activity versus bait anglers. I think what we need to do is in the long term partner with SFW and other groups, other angler groups, the Utah Angler Coalition, to begin kind of, it seems a little rough, but carving up the landscape to a certain degree. As we get more anglers out there on the landscape, we need to make sure that we have opportunities afforded to all interests out there, proportionally to what they represent in the community. So.
Okay.
Sorry, this is going to be question more than comment, just from what you've been saying. So on East Sevier Creek, we're talking about a 3-mile stretch. How big of an area is this drainage? Is 3 miles a big section, a small section? What's special about this three
about
miles?
50%.
No, it's about
50 miles total. But the section that we are talking about for East Fork is, well, it's about 10, I think, the total length of the stream there, if I remember correctly. So this represents about a third.
Okay, so it's not 3 miles like was stated, but it's 10
no,
miles.
No, it's 3 miles. Go ahead.
I was just gonna say, Richard had told me that it was just the 3 miles that was artificial flies and lures, so the rest was
correct.
Open to bait.
Yeah, it's that 3 mile section, but there's also an additional 2/3 of it that are already open to all things, bait, lure, fly. And that's... We recognize that too.
So my question is, do the bait fishermen crowd the fly fishermen out, or the fly fishermen just want to have a place where nobody bothers them? Or is it a diminishing of the catchable fish?
It's a combination of various things. There's a social aspect to angling, as you know. I think that fly anglers, to speak in generalities, are more purists as far as an experience goes. And actually seeing others out there sometimes is disturbing for them. I used to be one of those people until I started boating and fishing on reservoirs and realizing that you know, you're kind of held hostage by people and you have to put your blinders on and focus on the fish. But I think there's enough places that we can address that issue from a social standpoint, but also space people out so that we're not impacting the fish populations and we're segregating use so that we address social and biological concerns. Does that get at your question?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Christopher?
Kind of on the other side of that question, I just wanted to clarify. It's at one point I was thought you were saying that the main reason for these changes was to get more fish harvested because you felt like it was overpopulated. Is that a fair characterization in these cases, or is it more complicated than that?
I mean, yes. I mean, we would love to see more harvest on our streams. We would love to see thinning of populations. We would love to see people harvest fish because then regulations are actually really meaningful. They're designed to allow for a certain take of fish. We've got hangovers both in the trout community and the bass community related to a time 40, 50 years ago when the conservation ethos of never keeping a fish was important. It was critical to maintaining those populations on the landscape. That is no longer the case. We see populations get stunted, crowded, and you know, other states are going out and actually doing mechanical removal to thin populations and keep them at desirable growth rates and sizes that anglers want. Fish populations are unique in the fact that, you know, the more you have out there, the slower growing they are, and people want more and they want bigger. Oftentimes you can't have more and bigger. So we have a kind of conundrum that we deal with on a regular basis. So, yeah, encouraging a little bit of harvest would be helpful for us, sure. Where we have self-sustaining populations, where we're not simply paving in behind with stocked fish, I should clarify.
Are there any other comments from the RAC? If not, is there any motions? Or... Kevin.
Yeah, I'd like to make a motion that we accept the recommendations as presented. With all due respect to the comments from the special interest groups, we expect them to represent those people, but I truly believe that with the work that's been done by the fisheries people, that they understand the need for harvest and the opportunity to have people harvest more fish, and I think it's a healthier situation to do that. So my recommendation would be, or my motion would be, to accept the recommendations as presented.
Right.
I'll second.
Okay. All right. So we have, so the motion presented by Kevin would be to accept the DWR's recommendation as presented, and we have a second by John. Blazer, so I vote right. You think I'd pay attention? I've been here for a few years. Well, good. All right. We'll now go ahead and have a vote. So those who agree to accept the regions or accept the division's proposal as presented, all those in favor, please manifest. I say aye. I'm at church. Are there any no opposed? So what was that? Was that unanimous? All right.
Thank you.
All right, we'll now go to our next item, which is we'll hear from Riley Peck, the Wildlife Central Region Program Manager, and this is on the Central Region Deer Unit Management Plans.
All right, thank you, Mr. Chair. It's good to be here tonight. This presentation is, like you mentioned, on our Central Region Mule Deer Management Plans. It's meant to be simple by design, and we'll hop into it. Just as way of information, our unit deer management plans for the region are revisited every 5 years, and they coincide with the range trend studies that take place statewide. And in the central region, we just completed our range trend studies in 2017. And so due to that, we rewrote our unit management plans and are presenting them now. The unit management plans are kept within the sideboards of the statewide deer management plan. And that is consistent with these plans as well. Everything within them are consistent with the statewide management plan. By way of reference, here is the map of the area we're talking about, specifically Unit 16, 17, 18, and 19, broken up into some of the subunits there in the central region. As way of population objective, we are not recommending a change to the population objective on any of the units. They are listed there, but will stay the same. That is the same as the buck-to-doe ratios. As buck-to-doe ratios go, we are going to leave them the same. You'll notice that in this slide, we've broken out 19B and 19AC, even though it is the same unit. The Vernon unit is a subunit and is limited entry, and so that would have an effect on the buck-to-doe ratios and is managed differently. So by ways of these plans, we're not recommending a change to any of the buck-to-doe ratios either. Within the plan, we do address for agricultural damage and development mitigation. We're very similar to you guys here in the northern region in that we have very significant amounts of urban wildlife interface, and so we deal with that on a regular basis. And within that, all the plans we have mention on what we will do to address agricultural damage and development. That is all, also goes for disease, roadkill, predation. We have an extensive collar studies on each one of those units that help us to get to cause-specific mortality to understand, on some of the units, how migration plays in crossing the roadways. We have extensive disease studies. We are one that has chronic wasting disease in Unit 16, so we address that, and all of those issues will be addressed in the plan as well. We do have an emphasis on habitat. We will continue with the 5-year range trend study. Each biologist has individual spring range assessments, range rides, and propose many projects to improve the individual units through our watershed restoration initiative. One of the additions that we added to the plan was on Unit 16. We are asking that we amend the statewide deer management plan to include the south end of the Nebo as a deer translocation site. We have quite an active urban deer management plan going on in the central region, similar to here, and we have a lot of cities that are participating in that. This is an area that we have very low deer numbers as of recent. A lot of habitat restoration projects have gone into it, and we feel like it would be beneficial to use some of the deer that we are getting from those urban deer plans and move them to this site. Just by way of summary, we are not asking for a change in population objectives or buck-to-doe ratios. The plan is pretty active in looking at habitat improvements and projects that can be participated. We address agricultural damage and urban deer mitigation, as well as predator management and deer vehicle collisions. And again, just to mention, we'd like to include that south end of the Nebo, the southwest Mantis deer transplant location. And as promised, to keep it simple, that is all I have for you guys.
All right. Thank you very much. We'll now have time for questions from the public. Is there any questions? Okay. Do we have any questions from members of the RAC at this time for him? Our mule deer guy doesn't have questions. Very good.
Sounded good to me.
All right.
I appreciate Riley's work. I think that's great to have another translocation site that's a little closer. When you're talking about moving deer out of Harriman and Provo and some of those places we've talked about, to be able to dump on the south end of Nebo is a lot closer than Big Wash over in Vernal and some of those places. So as I sit here and listen to it, I think it makes perfect sense. So I'm pretty good with it. Thanks, Riley.
Thank you, Gay.
I would agree. All right. Well, now time for some questions. Again, a reminder, just those who are representing themselves will have 3 minutes, and those representing a group will have two. We have one comment card, and that is from Ken Strong, Sportsman for Fish and Wildlife.
Ken Strong, a Sportsman for Fish and Wildlife. Sportsman for Fish and Wildlife would like to recommend that you accept what Riley has presented. We're happy to say that Riley works hard and his guys in taking care of the Central Region, and so we would hope you accept this. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Any other comments from the public who didn't have time to bring a card up? All right. We'll now go to comments from the RAC. Any comments? Or motions? Oh,
yes. A motion to accept the proposal as presented.
All right. So.
I'll second.
So we have a Matt Clark who has motion to accept as presented, and Chris seconded that motion, Christopher. And so we'll go ahead and take a vote. Those who, I wear the wrong hat sometimes when I come in here. Those in favor of accepting this, if you'd please, we'll vote at this time. Those in favor say yes.
Yes.
I believe that was unanimous. All right. Is there any opposed? Okay. I believe that's it. If there's no other comments or anything else, we'll go ahead and adjourn today's meeting and thank everyone for coming out. Do I get to hit the gravel and everything?